NBC Monitor News on the Hour, brought to you by the State Farm Insurance Companies. Here is John Masterman.
The White House says an announcement may be expected shortly on the nation's rail emergency. The president won't make it personally. He's leaving for Camp David, Maryland. At 10 o'clock Eastern Time tonight, unless there's some kind of intervention or change of mind, the nation's railroads will shut down on orders of their managements. At this hour, four rail unions are in federal court in Washington asking for a temporary restraining order against the scheduled lockout. In Chicago, the Illinois Attorney General is asking a state court to enjoin the scheduled stop to passenger service in his state. Transportation Secretary John Volpe said a presidential order could give Volpe the job of allocating other transportation services to move goods essential to national defense and health.
The Department of Transportation is ready to follow such an order should circumstances require that it be issued. At this time, we have established an information center here in Washington at our Federal Railroad Administration to keep track of all developments. We're prepared to request the chairman of the Interstate Commerce Commission and the Civil Aeronautics Board and the Secretary of Commerce to take whatever steps are necessary to utilize existing transportation units for designated priority commodities.
Transportation Secretary John Volpe, who said Americans must be prepared for a sharp change in their way of living if the shutdown is in effect for any length of time. News of another strike and a return to work. Those stories and others after this for State Farm.
Hello, this is David Frost for State Farm Fire and Casualty. Inflation is terrible. Why, it's pushed the cost of Manhattan Island up from a reasonable $24 in beads to a sum well beyond the means of the average man. The only good thing is that inflation's probably pushed the value of your home well beyond the amount you paid for it, which is great, unless your home is still insured for its original value. If it is, and you're forced to rebuild it, it could cost you several thousand extra dollars. That's why in most states, you get built-in inflation coverage with your low-cost State Farm homeowners policy. It automatically increases your coverage as the value of your home goes up. I hope Manhattan is insured with a State Farm inflation coverage policy. They'd have a devil of a time rebuilding it for $24.
For your car, your home, your life, and your health. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
Once again, John Masterman.
All flights of National Airlines, the nation's sixth largest airline, have been halted by a strike of 3,500 ground employees. Another bargaining session was called in Washington in an attempt to find a settlement. Meanwhile, other carriers scheduled extra flights in an effort to accommodate travelers holding tickets on National. The General Electric Company announced today great numbers of its employees could return to work as soon as unions ratify the agreement settling the long GE strike. But the company said it will be 2 weeks or more before full production is resumed. It appears that Thursday will be the earliest date unions can return workers to their jobs. Two U.S. troop ships sailed from Vietnam today, bringing home 1,200 U.S. Marines, the beginning of a withdrawal of 50,000 American troops by mid-April. The 303rd Army Transportation Company is to be deactivated in Vietnam tomorrow, but only those men who've completed their year's tour of duty in Vietnam will return to the United States. Syrian radio says a second battle broke out tonight between Syrian and Israeli forces in the northern sector of the Golan Heights. In Londonderry, Northern Ireland, British troops stood by today while Roman Catholic demonstrators held an hour-long rally. There were no disorders. Western ambassadors to West Germany protested to the Soviet Union today recent East German interference with traffic to West Berlin, calling it a violation of Western rights of free access. More in a moment.
What's it like to fly a Pan Am 747?
It's quieter. There's much more room in tourists than I've ever encountered before.
Gigantic. I saw pictures of it, and bigger than the pictures, let me tell you.
I like the aisles. It seems like a good place to wander around.
I think you have to actually fly in it to really appreciate it.
Nobody's going to fly the Atlantic any other way.
Pan Am 747, the plane that speaks for itself. The plane with all the room in the world, now flying to Europe every day of the week.
Dr. Arthur Burns was sworn in today as chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, the agency charged with managing the nation's monetary policy. Burns pledged to protect the integrity of the dollar and help foster a stable prosperity. The Senate Democratic leader, Mike Mansfield, said a new lengthy Senate debate may be expected on President Nixon's proposal to expand the Safeguard anti-ballistic missile system. And Democratic Senator William Proxmire of Wisconsin said the Nixon administration's projected budget surplus of $1.3 billion was pitifully inadequate to curb inflation. Once again, the hour's top story, a White House announcement is expected shortly on the threatened shutdown of the nation's railroads. John Masterman, NBC News, reporting.
Listen again on the hour when Pan Am and the world's first 747 bring you NBC Monitor News. And they call the wind Mariah on monitor.
Here's Monitor Now on NBC.
Morgan presiding. From Canada this week came news that Barbara Streisand went to Parliament. She was the guest of Prime Minister Trudeau, and she sat in the gallery of the House of Commons. Later, they asked for a comment, and she said she'd never seen a parliament before. Quote, not even my own. She hasn't seen her own parliament? That's odd. I mean, she's met Prime Minister Nixon, hasn't she? Here's Jefferson, not the president. Baby, take me in your arms.
Come on and take me in your arms. I'm guilty every time, and I always will, because this heart of mine needs you so. Maybe I'm a fool, but I don't know why you wanna play it cool. And my love is getting stronger, so don't be cruel.
Come on, let's do it.
quick note for you folks on the go. Take along Miller High Life. You and your friends will enjoy Miller. Get a couple of six-packs of those gold cans. Or, if a party's planned, grab a case of Miller. Miller makes it right. Miller High Life, the champagne of beers. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee.
How would you like to be able to see the ship that Columbus sailed in to the New World? The real ship, not a replica. Well, maybe someday you'll be able to see it if you go to Haiti. The Santa Maria Foundation is diving for it in Haitian waters. One of the directors of that nonprofit foundation is Adolf Kiefer. He's a former Olympic swimmer, swimming coach, Navy survival expert, and a consultant to the President's Council on Physical Fitness. He lives in the Chicago suburb of Northfield, and it was there that he described the location of the sunken ship to our monitor reporter.
Actually, everyone agrees that the Santa Maria, the ship that Columbus came over to discover the New World, at that time called India, we all agree that this is where it went down. Columbus's logs, all of the books that had been written about Columbus and his voyages, all the historians, all the leading scientists of the world agree that this is the location. This is about 6.5 miles out from Cape Haitien, which is one of the cities in Haiti. And there are some artifacts that have been brought up, partially certified or fully certified, but this did not pinpoint. In other words, the artifacts could have been anywhere as much as 5 to 10 miles from the site.
Now, these artifacts, are they the ones that from the particular site that you're talking about?
Yes, actually, both the items that we brought up, namely, we brought up 5 pieces of artifacts, which consists of a piece of pottery and 2 large pieces of wood, and then plus that we had shackles and bolts of brass and 1 or 2 other small objects. These two parts, these two artifacts, pinpointed specifically to the date that the ship went down. And of course, as you know, this was the night, at midnight of all times, on Christmas night in 1492. And this is the first voyage to the New World, and this is the one that went down. This wreck on 1492 was really not his fault. What happened was is that they landed on the opposite side of the island in Haiti, and there they were greeted by friendly Indians, and they visited another little port where the Indians greeted them again exchanging gifts. And then finally they decided that they were going to set up the new Nuevedad, or the new village, the new world, and they were going to name it for the first day of the year. And they picked out a spot which, according to the record, shows it to be a mangrove area, which probably not a very good site to select, but nevertheless, that's where it was. And that night, they, were very tired, and as a result of this, Columbus decided he was going to go to bed. The first mate decided he was going to go to bed, and he put in charge what we would call a cabin boy, because they were within sight of land. It was a very calm, warm evening, and they only had a few leagues to go, and this was, of course, indicated in the log, too. But what happened was is that they ran aground. As the log mentions this happening, it was a very gentle, slight sensation that they actually rocked down to a reef, and there was no indication at all that this was a reef. And the cabin boy, not realizing what was happening, he didn't report it immediately, but he finally woke up the first mate, and the first mate, he became quite excited about it. And he actually, believe it or not, he jumped ship, and he decided he wouldn't have anything to do with it. And finally, when Columbus did get up, while the ship was pretty well aground, they found this to be hopeless, and the next day, with the aid of the 2 ships and the Indians and the long dugout canoes, they actually unloaded it completely. They stripped it. So what we're talking about here is really just the hull of the ship that we're going to try and find. They took down the sail, the mast. They took everything off that they possibly could, down to the water level. And obviously, there is quite a great deal of timber still remaining. And there would be things like spikes. And there might be a few coins and a few other artifacts that we're hoping to find. But
are there a number of reefs in this area that you're speaking of?
Yes, there's a series of reefs here. So
there are other possibilities then. There's some argument is about
this is the only,
where exactly it went
yes,
down.
That could be possible. However, in exploring the area by everyone, this is the only reef that has this the indication of the distance that was described in the log from the point they departed to the point they were going to go to. And it's the only reef that does not have waves breaking over it, so which would give them a warning. In this case, they had no warning at all.
If it is the Santa Maria, what would you then do? Bring it up eventually?
No. One of the first things we thought about was, and this is what I was hoping we might do when I first heard about it, was build a cofferdam around it because it's not very deep, and then go in as a full archaeological dig, which the University of Pennsylvania will give us all the graduate students we need. In other words, you do it, remove all the water, and then scientifically remove all of the coral and sand and anything else that might be obstructing the actual core of the ship. Now, this may not be necessary. It might be better to leave it lie as it is and build some symbol out in the ocean that this is the Santa Maria, then have a reproduction of the total reproduction of the Santa Maria on the shoreline and build a museum there in Haiti. I think the Santa Maria will capture the imagination of the youth of America and make them think in terms of adventure, exploration, new worlds to conquer. But yes, big business doesn't own the world yet.
Adolph Kiefer, thank you very, very much. For Monitor, this is Lou Eberhardt, NBC News, Chicago.
Well, I'd like to see the Santa Maria. I'd also like to know what happened to the Nina and the Pinta and the Long Island Railroad. Let me know. Right here on the Monitor Beacon.
One responsibility of the New York State Health Department is to alert the public to everyday dangers. Now, in the public interest, the department is asking your cooperation. Its Bureau of Emergency Health Services is investigating accidents related to household products. It needs data on accidents involving appliances, clothing, building fixtures, any product used around the home. Reports of actual cases will help the Bureau alert people to the danger of similar accidents. Here's how you can help. If you read a newspaper report of such an accident, clip the item and mail it to the state regional health office in your locality. Mark it for the attention of the emergency medical care representative. Once more, mail clippings of local accidents to regional office of the New York State Health Department nearest you, marked for the attention of the emergency medical care representative. You'll be rendering a service to all of the people of the state.
WNBC, AM and FM, New York.
A Monitor News report on the railroad dispute. Right now, it's still a standoff. The unions are seeking a temporary restraining order to prevent the railroads from stopping service tonight. A United States District Court is hearing that plea at this time. John Masterman reports on the possibility of action by the president.
An announcement is expected from the White House shortly on the emergency threatened by a national railroad shutdown. It remains to be seen what the president may recommend. There appears to be, under present law, no way to end the impasse. There are, of course, several ways to cope with it if it develops as scheduled at 10 o'clock Eastern Time tonight. Transportation Secretary John Volpe this afternoon pointed toward one possibility when he said that the president might delegate Volpe the job of allocating all other available transportation services to assure the maximum movement of goods essential to national defense and public health. The dispute between the railroads and the four shopcraft unions, sheet metal workers, machinists, boilermakers, and electricians, is 14 months old. It's complicated and involves arguments over not only wages, but also changes in work rules. The principal one sought by the railroads being one to permit a limited amount of crossing craft lines for incidental work. One strike call was averted when the president convened an emergency board. In December, Labor Secretary Schultz announced agreement on the issues, raising wages 18% and permitting a member of one craft to work incidentally in another. But December 17th, the sheet metal workers announced its members had rejected the work rules change, and that killed the agreement for all four unions. The negotiations resumed January 8th and collapsed Thursday. And with threats and warnings from each side, the emergency blossomed today. The union struck the Union Pacific Railroad at midnight, contending that was the start of a series of strikes against the railroads picked for their vulnerability to coercive settlements. The railroads banded together and announced they were shutting down, locking out the workers, stopping the trains. And at this hour, that's the way it stands. At 10 p.m., U.S. railroads stop rolling. John Masterman, NBC News in Washington for Monitor.
Stay tuned to Monitor and NBC for all late developments on the railroad situation, especially you riders on the New Haven and the Penn Central, because it's going to be very hard for you to tell a stoppage from the regularly scheduled delays. Bobby Gentry and Glenn Campbell on Monitor, All I Have to Do is Dream. It's a fascinating and puzzling business sometimes. Listen to this unusual story told by Mike Boffman of station WHO in Des Moines, Iowa.
Edward Briney and his wife live on a 120-acre farm near Eddyville, Iowa. Last week, the farm was 200 acres in size, but in a few months, the farm might have to be sold completely to pay a prowler who was shot by a booby-trapped shotgun in 1967 while breaking into the Briney's farm home. The prowler was first charged with breaking and entering, a felony, but was allowed to enter a guilty plea to the lesser charge of larceny in Mahaska County District Court. For that misdemeanor, he was fined $50 and set free. Last year, the prowler filed a civil suit asking $30,000 damages from the Brineys for injury he suffered when a booby-trap shotgun discharged, striking him in the ankles. The prowler's attorney says the legal precedent for that civil action dates back to a boy stealing grapes from a farm back in the 1870s.
Report said that the boy was stealing grapes and that a trap gun went off and shot him, and that the fact that he was a thief or a trespasser didn't change the law a bit, that the person that set the trap gun was guilty of a crime and was liable for civil damages.
Briney's neighbors paid $10,001 for 80 acres of his land sold at public auction this week, saying they would put the land in trust for the Brineys. The attorney for the prowler was the only other bidder at the auction who said he entered the bidding to make sure the land was sold at a reasonable price. Briney is also receiving aid from people across the country who have heard of his case. When asked about the injuries to the prowler from his booby trap, Briney says this.
He can get around pretty good. It's not permanent.
Mike Rothman, WHO, Des Moines, Iowa, reporting for Monitor.
If you want
want to know what it's like to fly a Pan Am 747, just ask a man who's flown one. We did.
More like really sitting in a hotel lounge than in an airplane. It's a completely different feeling altogether. It's quiet, it's very smooth. You have an extremely comfortable chair to sit in. You have every facility, your controls for your own comfort, with your lighting and your controls by your seat are all absolutely first class. It's the first aircraft, or one of the first aircrafts that I've ever flown in, that you can put as many belongings up on the rack above you, which is all enclosed.
Now you can fly a Pan Am 747 to Europe any day of the week at no extra fare. For reservations and information, call a Pan Am travel agent or stop in at any Pan Am ticket office.
Pan Am, by taking the initiative in this, have assured themselves of a tremendous future with this wonderful airplane.
Monitor thing will have a brief time out.